My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert, recording this episode on Tuesday, September 6th, 2022. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. If you're really into this thing, go over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you rate your podcast. Give it a 5-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival. Subscribe, $3 a month for hours and hours and hours of bonus content. This is episode 596. I'm not alone. I have a super special return guest. She's a comedian, a writer, and the star of Oh God, another show about abortion, and Maryland native. Allison Leiby is here with me. How are you today, Allison?
I'm good. I always forget, and then I'm instantly reminded that we're both Marylanders for our New York lives. And it's such a special thing.
I agree. And that's why I had to support your show. One, because I like it. I think you're talented. But I also feel like a kinship with you because we're from the same state. You're from,
and it's a weird state. Like Maryland is weirder than other states. I know.
You think so?
Not because it's just like a state that has so much going on in it.
Yeah.
Also, is so small that like there are state like California. Like there's a lot of different culture and geography and just like sprawl, all different things in California. But everything's so far apart that you don't really engage with it. But like Maryland has like beach, cities, suburbs, rural, mountains, like liberal, conservative, like, and it's all very small. So you actually end up like encountering all of it.
Yeah. And we have a California, Maryland.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was near there last month, taking my mom to do something. And I'm from PG County. So like going like maybe, to Charles County, maybe like 15 minutes below the St. Charles Town Center. I don't even know if you know that, but it's different, and the people talk differently.
Yes, there's like 10 different dialects in Maryland, which is like the fifth or sixth smallest state, I think. Like it's like super small and compared, like I don't know an official number, maybe it's 10 or something, but it's like you have so much going on in such a tight, tiny little space.
Yeah, I love it's a beautiful state. I mean, it's shitty to say, but like if I didn't have dreams, I would still be there.
Yeah, I mean, it's I was
dreams in the performing arts, basically.
Yes,
that's a better way to say it.
Yes, we can't just like live wherever and pursue like comedy and television and these things. Like you have to be in New York or Los Angeles. But I was just home, and it was so like summer Maryland. It's like it's so lush, so good. Everything's so green. Like it was just like nice. I was like, oh, I forget that this is like a nice place sometimes.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think I've had more of a fondness of it since I left. But I was never like my listeners know. I was never the type of person like, I gotta get out of this town, bro.
Yeah, I didn't feel that way about like Maryland as a whole. I didn't love like the community I grew up in, but I wasn't like, it's because Maryland sucks. I was like, no, it's just like these people were terrible.
I think you mentioned something about that before. I didn't get a chance to listen to our old episode.
Conservative leaning, very white Christian, very homogenous. And I was just like, oh, this like wasn't really for me. This, I didn't have like you know, there were like three Jews in my 2000 person high school. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Like not the best environment, but Maryland as a place, I was like, oh, I love it here. It's so nice.
Yeah. It is a different thing when you're Jewish. I don't think I really met that many Jewish people until I moved to Chicago. And when one of my classmates in grad school was Jewish, and he's like, Chris, he tried to be all serious. He was a kind of a weird guy, but he was like, hey, Chris, you know, I'm Jewish. And I was like, okay, this isn't school ties, man. I don't care. I mean, just be
cool.
Yeah. What kind of person are you? Can you act? Can we do the scene together?
Yes. Right.
You know, and then working in Skokie, obviously, is like a lot of Jewish people. But at the same time, that kind of reminded me more of home than any place that I've ever been. Like, because it's suburban.
Yeah.
Anywhere USA. And they had all the stores and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Very familiar feeling.
Yeah. I saw we had an Instagram exchange a couple of months, maybe a month or two ago, that I thought was really funny. And I just wanted to start with it. Like in July 29th, you had a picture of you and it's on your Instagram, and you in June of 2003, when you had just won the Eastern Sprints rowing for Cornell, and you talked about a spinal surgery that almost killed you. It was like a beautiful post. And then at the end, you said, happy 19th. I'm not dead anniversary to me. Can't believe I was so close to death. And I still spend some time out of my life writing complaint letters to salad chains.
Yes, I do.
And I thought that was really hilarious. And I think it is somewhere I wrote somewhere where I said I said something like that was a beautiful story. I don't even know if I can find it now.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was a comment or if it was a message between us as a response to it.
Yeah, I don't even remember. I was like,
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that was a beautiful story. What is your favorite salad chain? And you never answered.
Oh, so, yeah.
And that's why you're back on the show.
To get called out for not answering.
Calling you out, Allison.
I'm so bad at it. At like,
what's your take on like, well, salad like, chain?
I got into it. Was it no, Chopped and I got into it because years ago because they had a salad I really liked. And I was working like a job in Midtown during the day and then like doing comedy at night. And like, there were very few joys in my life. And one of them was this very specific salad.
Yeah.
If you sit in a cubicle doing something you don't enjoy, like it's like at least have lunch be good. And they had this great salad, the NorCal Cobb, and it was like romaine and smoked turkey and avocado and
I liked it.
Tomato and cheddar and sourdough croutons in this like and these like pickled onions and piquillo peppers.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was like spicy and acid, and then it had this like green goddess dressing. And it was just like, for me, a dream salad. It had everything I could have wanted in it. And then they got rid of it, and then they got rid of like some of the elements, so you couldn't even recreate it. They were like no more piquillo peppers and no more green goddess dress, or like something like two of the things.
Sure.
And I like wrote to them, and I was like, "Why did you do that? Like, why did you get rid of it?" I'm big on communicating with.
Why did you do that?
Why did you get rid of it? Like, it was popular. I heard people ordering it around me as well. It's not like I was the only one eating it. Like, me and Alyssa Wolf, who you know, both loved it.
Alyssa.
We were both working nearby each other, and we would go get that salad.
Yeah.
And always talk about how much we loved it. And then they got rid of it, and I was like, and they were just like, we got rid of it. Like, there was no answer. There was no, like, well, with pricing, it's hard to source this, or like we didn't see that people were eating. Like they were just like, we got rid of it.
And it wasn't like a seasonal thing. It was just like something that was kind of a staple and they just got rid of.
It was just like always on the menu. And then one day it wasn't.
That's even worse.
Their explanation was we wanted to like just like not even like, oh, you know, you could recreate it with these similar ingredients. Like just no help. And I was like, I'm never eating at a Chopped again. And I never have.
Oh shit. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
I just like put my foot down and was like, no more. I don't like, I'm so out of the like lunch salad place game because as many people, I've been working from home and doing things from home. And even just the last few years, I haven't really been in Midtown where I feel like that's more of a thing.
Yeah.
I do Sweet Green, you know, sometimes.
Sweet Green's good.
it's so salty in a way that I like, but then I'm like, is this doing what I need it to do? Like, I wanted to get a salad and suddenly I'm going to
like, you could have had a cheeseburger.
Right. It's like the amount of sodium of like a BLT and fries. And you're like, all right, well, I guess it was kale. So I don't know. Do you have a place that you like or a go-to? Like, what do you eat for lunch? What
are
you
eating for lunch? Well, now I was talking about this on the last episode. I like Wegmans. They opened up I actually have to do the worker bee commute 3 days a week. And they opened up a Wegmans, I believe, in 2020.
Yeah.
And they have really good salads. Like they're not as sexy as Chopped or Sweetgreen.
Right.
But they're good, and you don't feel
like it's amazing.
It's amazing. You don't.
The
you
most
don't.
Important grocery store that exists.
It's the best. And my late great dad was he worked at Shoppers Food Warehouse for a very long time, and we'd always talk about different grocery stores and stuff, and what we liked the best, and what Wegmans to me, because we're East Coasters and in the Northeast region, it is the best. I can't speak for Publix. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah. I don't know the other regions.
Yeah.
Like when I was you know, until I was 5 years old, like for a period of time, we lived in Rochester, New York, and like Wegmans was our grocery store. And it was only an upstate New York and surrounding area thing. And so now that it's like kind of like moved through, like now there's like there's one in Brooklyn, there's one to my parents in Maryland. So like Wegmans came to Maryland. My mom, like we lost our mind. She was like, I can't believe we're going to have Wegmans. Like, I can't believe it.
Is it the one in Columbia that's new? No, I don't think
it's
that's
in Wachapel, like Crofton.
Oh, okay.
It's on Route 3.
All right. Because there's one in the best one I've been to was in like I was driving down to see my mom. This was like, God, I want to say it was whatever town I just mentioned, Columbia area. Yeah. And it's massive. It was like. It was like a parking deck for a grocery store, just that store.
Yes. It is truly, they make those stores huge and like it's worth it. Like I went to Cornell, which is in Ithaca, and like we had Wegmans. So like when I went to college, I was like, I'm back in the Wegmans game. Like I'd gone when I was like a very young kid, but my mom was like, oh, you loved Wegmans. Like it was, we went all the time.
Their bakery's
and I got to
incredible.
Like have it back in college. And I was like, to be a college student and get to like shop at a suburban Wegmans was heaven.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like, so I kind of do salad.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel like crap after you eat it, you know. Their sandwiches are good. Even their sometimes I get to work early and I get to work at 6:30. And if I just get some breakfast, like some fruit, maybe I'll do a muffin, but mainly I'll do like some fruit and then get a sandwich for lunch so I don't have to go out. That they're like holiday turkey sandwich is really fantastic.
Yeah.
It's like,
sandwiches.
Wow.
Just a great, just an all around special place.
Yes. Yeah. So that's a great store. I try to go there so I don't have to go anywhere else. But like I was in Midtown for about 4 months working on Broadway and I got put on to Dig In.
Oh, I liked Dig In.
Yeah. They revamped some stuff. I'd gone like maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I remember it being like, I was like, okay, this is all right. But then like doing that play and being trying to eat better. Like it's good. Like you get the roasted carrots.
You can get vegetables that aren't just salad, which I think is like a nice, like it's not just like chopped up greens and, you know, salad crap. And like you can actually get like some Brussels sprouts and like some chicken. And there's just not a lot of opportunities to do that in Midtown for lunch.
Yeah.
Maybe that aren't like a sit down meal or like really expensive or something.
Yeah. Cause you definitely have your places. Like Potbelly was one that I would go once a week. I like their tuna sandwich. I think that's kind of it. I try not to.
Yeah. I kind of like was out of the like, lunch game by the time like Cava and like all of these like new like a lot of like Middle Eastern and like Mediterranean places, and I'm like, wow, I would have loved just like a hummus bowl kind of thing when I was working in the office, but that wasn't an option.
Yeah, it would be nice to be on set and you just eat whatever they give you. That's always good.
Yeah, that's always
one day
free lunch. Yeah, it's the one thing I miss from going in to some writing jobs.
Yeah,
they paid for lunch and they don't now, and my pay is the same. So, I'm like, well, that's interesting, because that was like a significant amount of money every week that was getting spent on breakfast and lunch.
Oh my god, it's so Oh, it's like you're going to at least pay $15 for lunch. Easy. It's just,
and you'll probably get breakfast and coffee at some point, or coffee in the afternoon, or it's a $20-$25 a day experience to like not be able to eat in your home.
It's insane.
And unless you bring stuff with you, which like, you know, that requires also like the energy to prepare that and do that.
Yeah.
And, like, set that up. And that's like, not no time.
Sometimes you feel like it. I think that's why a lot of people are like doing the opting out of working. They want to work remotely. They don't want to go back in the office. You save so much money working from home, and you can get the same job done. But some companies, they're just not down with that.
Yeah,
and it's just like
a strange place with it all right now.
How was it for you, like the past couple of years? I know we're coming out of it. I want to talk about your show, but talk about your experience during the pandemic.
I mean, I was very lucky that I was working on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and we did a remote. We were about to start. We were supposed to start March 23rd, 2020. And so, you know, it was a lot of like, well, come back to the office, like whatever. And then like, obviously the pandemic happened and they kind of pushed it a bit or whatever. But then like I did, like in that first kind of like calendar year of COVID, like I did have a job and money was coming in and I was safe and able to work out of my home.
Right.
Like I am incredibly lucky that that was lined up, because I think like for people who were maybe in between jobs and then the pandemic hit, like no one was going into like new stuff at the beginning. It was just like, this is our team. We're just going to go into next season or keep working ourselves. So it was really, I was very, very, very fortunate to have that there. But then I didn't do stand up basically until we got the vaccine.
Neither did I.
Yeah. I understand different people's like needs and desires to do it. I just personally was like, for me, I'm not, not gonna do it. I didn't ride the subway until I was vaccinated. I was just like, I'm just going to wait. I have the luxury that I can. And so therefore I will keep myself off of the trains and out of the shows.
Yeah.
While other people are at risk who maybe can't say no to those opportunities.
Right. Right. I'm getting my second booster tomorrow.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I got to figure out a day next week to do that.
Yeah. I'm going to do it. Yeah, me too. I'm going to do it at Walgreens. On my way home from work tomorrow, because I think they just opened it up. I saw a report on the news where they said they were going to open it up after Labor Day. So I just put in my info and they were like, you got the appointment? I was like,
yeah,
cool.
My doctor's office, like all my doctors are through one healthcare, through NYU hospitals. And so I got like an email from them that was like, hey, like you could do it at your pharmacy. You could also do it here. Like we're going to have them starting Monday or something like that. So I was like, great. All right. So we're in.
Me too. I'm happy. Yeah.
I had to have another spine surgery in January of 2021. And it was right before, it was when like the healthcare workers were vaccinated, which was great.
Yeah.
But we, like the regular people who are, you know, under 55 were not. So I had to be in the hospital for that. And it was so scary. And then like no one could come over and help me. Like it was like very hard to like coordinate care. Cause like you get to a point with it where like recovery from back surgery where you're like, oh, I could like be on my own. I can get up and, you know, move around my apartment, but like I can't load and unload my dishwasher. I can't take my garbage anywhere. Like you need somebody to come help you do some like kind of regular stuff. And it was just so hard. Cause it was like, I can't have this be the moment that I get I couldn't get COVID while I was recovering. I couldn't cough. I couldn't it would just be terrible.
God.
So it was just like this like terrifying era of being kind of like trapped, even more so than I was before.
Oh man.
But so, made it through
How long did it take you to recover?
I mean, I was in the hospital for a couple of days and then it was like, the first week is really tough. And I had a friend just staying with me.
Oh, that's good.
Doing everything. So like, cause like, you can't like those first couple nights, like getting in and out of bed is really just like, you need somebody to kind of help you and to like, make sure you don't fall down or whatever.
Yeah.
And just to like make you food and do stuff.
Sure.
And also company. It was supposed to be my parents, and my parents got COVID.
Oh,
like,
man.
A week before I, or like 2 weeks before I was having surgery. And like, even if they were recovered, I was like, it's not worth like
them coming up.
That was like still so early in our understanding of like how it was transmitted anyway. And I was like, also they like, they're older. Like it definitely like weakened them and they were like tired for a while. And I was like, you can't, we're going to be on the same page. Like we both won't be able to do anything.
if you can't
like,
do anything. Show
up trying to like do like things around the house for me or like hold me up. But then it was like, it's one bad week. And then it was like, it was probably like 3 or 4 weeks of like slow progress that went from like being able to like get up and down on my own and like not really struggle with that to like going on little walks just around my block to then like being able to like, I'm going to go to the bodega. I'm going to pick up some seltzer and bring it back and like be able to, it was probably like 2 or 3 weeks after that I was able to do that.
Man, that's quite a while.
Yeah. It was a long, that was a long time, but it was like January. I was like, and everybody was staying home. I was like, well, I'm not missing. It was like kind of the perfect time to do it like with my life because we were working from home on Zoom. So I could go right back to work as soon as I felt I could sit or, and they were like, feel free to lie down and just listen or whatever. I was working on Maisel and Amy has had a lot of the same back surgeries as me. So she's very understanding of like, oh, I know where you're at. Like just lay down. We don't care. We're on Zoom.
Yeah.
But then like there was no stand up that I was really missing out on. And there was no like, real social calendar that I was missing out on because no one was going anywhere or doing anything. It was like before we had the vaccine, everybody was like, I guess we'll get a drink outside. But it was January. No one was doing that. So
yeah,
it was kind of like good timing. And I think about how like if that had happened now or if that happened in 2019 that I needed that surgery, like I would have missed a month or like definitely a month of any kind of work and two months at least of stand up. You're not going to like schlep around to like go do spots. And, like I'm not going to Bushwick to do 12 minutes of bombing jokes when like I'm barely upright. Like that's not happening. Yeah. So,
and it'll make you feel even worse.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, it's going to tire you out for no reason. And like, it's just not, and then like you would have to take a car cause you can't just like get on the subway when you're recovering from surgery. So then it's like, now you're spending money to like do bad. Like it just, I was like, okay, I'm glad it was a very scary moment and obviously a very unpleasant surgery you have to go through, but it was a long time coming and it kind of was the right time to do it.
So your surgery, what you had to have it again. What was the initial, like over 20 years ago, almost like what?
I've had four back surgery.
Did we talk about this?
I think so. Maybe. I don't know. It's not like particularly fascinating, but like I have my discs herniate. So like when that happens, there's like sharp pieces of disc out in your spinal column. So they have to go retrieve all of them. And I'd had a couple of those and we got to the point where like after you've had a certain kind of herniation or the kind of like the damage that had been done for me, they were like, now we just have to fuse those two vertebrae together because there's nothing left in between them and you can't have your bones just like grinding on each other. You need to kind of just secure them in place. So they put in some rods and screws and like kind of closed everything up. And it was, I mean, for what it was not as bad as I was expecting it would be. I thought it would be like a much harder months and months of recovering, but it was really, I mean, I think within 2 months I was like pretty much living normally.
Yeah. And when did you get back to doing comedy on a regular basis?
I think it was like, when did we get the vaccine? The spring? Like, so
yeah, like I got mine in March, both of my shots in March. So early spring. Yeah.
Yeah, I think like I got mine like that first week of April or something like that. And then once I had cleared the like I got J&J for I just signed up for whatever the first appointment I could get was. And that's what it was. And I was like, well, I mean, it worked. I didn't get COVID until like after my booster during like the Omicron wave of like December of last year. So, it worked. It lasted.
Yeah. Right.
So I think like right at like once I cleared the like 2 or 3 weeks that they recommended, then I was like, OK, I mean,
yeah.
We're back. But there were like Union Hall didn't even like open again until the end of June.
Okay.
Like I think there were places that were like, as it was rolling out and people had to like wait and get their second vaccine, second shots and stuff like that. I think there were places that were like, we're just going to wait until like critical mass of people are like out and around again. So like, I remember when Union Hall opened at the end of June, that's when I was like, and now we're really back.
Right.
That's such a, like, Union Hall and Littlefield are like such a big part of my stand-up world. Mostly because I live near them, so I'm always like, bothering people. I'm like, can I do your show? Because I can walk to it.
I like the Union Hall. One of my favorite places to perform. It got, and I don't want to sound like I'm one of these comps, like, you can't say anything, because I'm not that dude. But I remember being on stage there. I think I might have been doing Phoebe Robinson's show in like 2018 or 2019. And then like someone was like, they were like, ooh, oh my God, I can't believe, I'm like, oh my, but then they might have just been kids.
It does sometimes get a younger, and I think like Phoebe especially does also draw like a younger crowd than like just a whatever swath of the population. I think she appeals to like young people in a really cool way. And young people are the worst audiences. I'd rather have like a bunch of boomers be like, all right, like than like a bunch of like super touchy. And again, I don't want to be somebody who's like, everybody's so sensitive, but it's like, it's not even, it's that they actually don't understand the world enough to like understand what you're saying sometimes.
Yeah.
Like that's, a 24-year-old, if you like bring up something that's kind of edgy, like it's more that they like don't get what you're saying, what you're talking about.
That's true. And I think yeah, no, it's true. I mean, cause it was frustrating to me at the time because, you know, looking back, those were the places where I cut my teeth, you know, like all these weird little rooms in Brooklyn and Bushwick, these variety shows. And, you know, every now and then you get a chance to perform at the Knitting Factory.
Yep.
And you want to show, you kind of want to, when you're doing those cool hip shows and Littlefield too, you want to, you want to do your thing. You want to flex. And it was just fascinating to me. I was like, what, really? Okay. And my act is not like, it's not like,
I can't think of something that you would say on stage that would elicit like, really saying that? Like, I mean, not that you're not like somebody who like has like,
I push boundaries, but it's not in a malicious way.
Right.
And it's just trying
to edgelord.
Yeah. So it's just kind of like, really? Oh, okay. You know, like cause I notice where stuff hits. Like I was opening for Tommy Davidson a month or two ago and at Levity Live, and it's like a general audience, but mostly black.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, this is my time to see if this shit works.
Yeah.
Cause if they like it, then I know I got gold.
Yeah.
And I did. And then I was in Staten Island a couple weeks ago and this stuff hit hard. And it was an audience that was like, they were there for a fun show at a brewery. You know what I mean?
Right. It's cool. Like,
yeah. So it's fun to do that and go in different places. That's what I like about this area, where you can go to, like Maryland, you can go to all these different places and try your stuff.
Yeah. You can go into like a super young hip room. You can go into like a touristy club audience. You can go into like kind of like alti weirdos that are like doing kind of anti-comedy. You can go into like the most basic like people on the planet. Like there's everybody here.
How do you think Brooklyn's changed, the comedy scene in Brooklyn, like from even prior to the pandemic, you know, like when you started out, where were you getting up?
I mean, I remember just spending hours and hours a week at the Creek. And like being there and doing, and then like Legion Bar.
Yes. Where did you start? When did you start? What year?
Oh God. I actually don't remember.
I started in 2009.
I think like 2010. Like,
okay. So we were around the same, class. Yeah.
I started around 2010, give or take. And Legion and, What was Over the Eight before it was Over the Eight?
I don't remember that. I just remember Over the Eight.
Is that what it was called?
Oh, is that what that was?
I keep forgetting like what, like I can like see things and I'm like, what street is
Woods was different, though. I think
the Woods was different. It was, but like, I,
Oh, Nat Townsend.
Yeah, they're just like, so those places were where I like started and yeah. just like grinding through like mics and then shows.
Yeah.
And then really like, I think where like the bulk of my comedy experience coming up was like when UCB East had a bunch yes. of stand-up shows.
Yeah.
That's when I was like, I'm on all of these all the time. And this is a yeah. place that I feel like I ran a show there. I took over shows there. I would like co-host all the time for people. And also like you had like those Thursday nights of like Fresh Out and Lasers and mm-hmm. whatever was coming in at 11. Like, and then if you build it on Saturdays and or Sundays, depending on like what year it was. And it's just like, yeah. that was where I did a lot of just like development. The early Brooklyn scene was like, yeah. it was like not even Bushwick. It was like before it was like,
yeah.
It was like Williamsburg was kind
of. It was Williamsburg. And because I think the rise of Lena Dunham kind of brought out like mm-hmm. all these interesting people that would come to these, that would literally move to Williamsburg.
Yeah.
And then the shows started happening. You made me think about this because we talked about this after your show last month yeah. where like, even though they could have paid us at UCB East, it was still a great place to do comedy.
Yeah.
It was like a great place to do stand up because that was a young audience, right?
It was young. Cause there was a lot of like, you get like the UCB students, like get to go see shows for like free or for yeah. cheap or something like that. So like you always had kind of a pool of like young people that like loved and were trying to do comedy, mm-hmm. but then also like, I think they did a lot of stuff with NYU and the other yeah. universities in New York of just like student rate tickets. And because it was cheap, like, and you could pay $5 and there was no drink minimum and
right.
you could just come in and see a show, but like a show that's on a stage with lights and not necessarily just the back of a bar.
Right.
So I think it got like young people who don't have the money to go spend $60 at the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah.
On a night. It's like, so it was in general like a younger, and it was like the East Village, kind mm-hmm. of like a younger, hipper area.
That place was, place was fucking great. It sort of became a place where you, if you're on those shows, you take risks because it's like, if I know, like I told you this like last month, like I know if I have a show on Saturday night at some, I don't know, some shelter out in yeah. rich people area or middle of nowhere, New Jersey, I'm going to try these jokes and I'm going to be more fearless because I'm like, I'm going to try to do well all the time. But it's just like, I'm not getting paid for this. I'm going to yeah. go hard. I'm going to put the pedal to the metal and go for it. And when you get those laughs, you're like, okay, I got something. I do have something, or I don't.
Right. Right. Yeah. It is a place where like, because you weren't getting paid, it was kind of looser in that way and felt more like a workout room. And
yeah.
like, if somebody was making money and it wasn't comics, it's fucked up. But like, mm-hmm. I'm glad with the time I had there and
they still
should have paid us, but I
yeah.
would have. But I clearly kept going and supporting it, even though we weren't.
And I didn't think
I have a very conflicted, like, I'm like, I know. Yeah, I see both sides.
I do, too. But at the same time, I use it for what it was. And it wasn't yeah. all the time. It wasn't all the time for me. I knew. And it was perfect because if you could do Lasers and Fresh Out, then you didn't have to go anywhere that yeah. you in one place.
Yeah, you could sit at the bar in between. You could grab a slice of pizza. Like, you're there all night. It's just kind of a nice, you know, the way that, you know, some people work in certain clubs and they're just like, yeah. I have a 7:30, I have an 8:45, and I have a 9:15 at these three.
It's yeah.
Like, oh yeah. You get to just like be in a place that feels like home.
Yeah. And I wasn't really, and I don't want the listeners to have the impression that like I'm not going to pay. So I'm not going to fucking do anything, you know?
No, not at all. Like, it's just like, you know, when you're getting paid, like for like, you know, a random one-off show, if they're like, here's $200, come do 20 minutes. And, mm-hmm. people spent money to see that. You're like, well, I got to give them the good. You could slip in new stuff all the time, but like you want to yeah. give them the tried and true stuff that like, it's going to get laughs. They're going to feel like it was worth their money. Whereas like if a bunch yeah. of like 22-year-olds spent $5 because they want to see something cool and raw, like then you can give them that.
Yeah. It was something about that energy in that place, but even more so, I'm kind of bummed that I didn't get to do much stand up at the Under Gristides. Maybe once. I did College Humor there once. But it's something about that basement, that room, the weird pillar.
Yeah.
And like you just,
it was so special.
That fucking energy.
I wasn't like regularly there, but I did a handful of spots there before it closed. And it was just such, and now like Asylum owns it, and it's like, it's still a performance space, and it's like a lot of improv and sketch, and there's like some stand up there, but not really anymore. And it's just like, I don't, it's a bummer because it's such a cool spot.
Well, that last show that I did, probably the last time I had seen you prior to last month was.
Subculture.
If you build it, that was kind of wild in a good way.
A cool space that like, if it like, you know, it was big. So if you weren't pulling a lot of people, like there were nights where we had like 20 or 25 people in that audience, and that room can seat 175 if it's like kind of everything is filled. So like that feels small, but like, man, the nights, holiday weekends, like I was just thinking about like yesterday, how normally on a 3-day weekend, like a Sunday night would have been just like, I would have been like coming down from like, we would just, Robert and I would sell it out because people were like, oh, a thing to do at 9 o'clock on a Sunday, like on any other week, that's like a big lift for people. But when Monday is off, they can't wait to come. We would book like the best lineup for that weekend. And it would just be like so fun and great. Like that room was really cool. It's a bummer that it's, I think they sell like Jeep accessories now.
That's what you were saying. That's so like sad.
Tour. It sucks. I don't know what's happening like necessarily downstairs, but I know that the like street level of that building is now like, you know, for people to like get cool seat covers for their Hummer or something. It's like,
oh my God, that's so sad. Cause most of my album is from that set that I did at your show.
Oh, fun.
And it was
a cool room.
It was so like, because it was Alana was there.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And that was the, I think she went on before me, I think. And then I went on, and it was, I talked about Kobe and the night that he died. And that was some fucking energy in that place. And I don't think I felt that in that scene until coming to your show.
Yeah.
You know, coming to Oh God, Another Show About Abortion.
Oh, yeah.
I had gone to see a friend in doing one of my castmates from Lehman Trilogy. He was doing sister acts down at the Paper Mill Playhouse.
Oh, nice.
Which was fun. It was fun. It was like, oh, I'm a play. I'm excited to see a play. Yeah. But it's like, it's nothing like
comedy.
Seeing like stand up, seeing comedy and like that. What was it like for you? Well, let's go back a little bit. Let's Pulp Fiction this thing.
Sure.
And go back to the origins of it. I remember you doing it. You did it some at Union Hall, right?
Yeah, I did. So I like started writing material about my abortion experience. And I just found it was like easy to kind of start. Like I was like, I wrote like two or three jokes that went really poorly the first time I did them because I was like not confident enough to get on stage and be like, I had an abortion, and everybody like crossed their arms and was terrible. And I was obviously not ready yet. But I had written some jokes, and I just found like I was like all of a sudden it was building so fast. Like it was just so easy to keep tagging and to add another thing to be like, oh, also this happened. And I was like, all right, I've got 20. I can do 60.
Yeah.
Like it just felt like there's something here to like develop. So I did a week at the Creek in January of 2020, and just kind of workshopped like the first draft of it.
Okay.
And that, which was like so helpful. And like, you know, I know a lot of people have a lot of thoughts on the Creek, but like, I'm glad that that existed. And I'm bummed that there isn't, though. Maybe there is a, I don't even know what, like where people perform anymore.
Wait, what thoughts about the Creek are you?
I feel like some people found it like toxic and, you know, include like, you know, too closed of a circle, like community wise and, or that some people kind of like never left there. And then,
Well, that's kind of on them. That's, I mean, in a lot, like you're saying, but I just wanted to touch on that. Cause it's a lot of times it's, you got to try these different places. Like I liked coming to UCB East. Every now and then somebody would have something at the Creek. I'd have great times there. Yeah, totally. Good food there. You catch up with people. But yeah, I was never the type of person to stay at one place and just kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I always liked bouncing around and not getting too stuck. It's just, you could see people who like only performed in one place, whatever that is. Like, even if that's like the really garbagey clubs that like are hacky or whatever, you can tell if somebody only performs there and then all of a sudden you see them somewhere else and it's like, this doesn't work. So like, I mean, it was cool that the Creek let us like let people do those Week at the Creeks.
Yeah, it was great. I did one. Yeah.
You can't like, it's just so rare to get 5 nights of an hour to like workshop. And it's like, yeah, were some of them like very poorly attended? Like, I think my first night there were like 6 people there and, you know, 2 of them were other comics that were, one was opening and the other one was like with me for notes or something. Like, it's just like,
But
at the same time, like I had some like really packed ones and like, they really were like, when you're workshopping an hour to not have to go out of town, to be able to really like bring up all your notes and just be like, I'm working through this thing and like go night after night for a week. Like, it's just such a luxury that like doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
In New York. And then I took that and I rewrote it and like added some stuff and changed some stuff. And then I did it at Union Hall March 3rd, 2020. So it was a super spreader event because like a bunch of people like ended up having COVID after that. And I was not one of them, but I was oh God.
Wow. Well, you didn't know though back then.
March 3rd, like we were still like, is this anything? Like, I think I did shows all that week. And then the next week I was like, you know what? I'm out. And then they shut down like almost.
It was like the 12th, 14th or something. Cause our play got shut down. Broadway got shut down mid March, early to mid March, something like that. Yeah.
So I didn't know. So then, so I like did that. And then like the pandemic happened and I was like, this thing's, and like that show was such a big, like the producers that I, you know, currently just finished working with at Cherry Lane had come to that show and like, seen that show. And we were we had like a meeting scheduled for like March 17th or something, like to sit down and talk about like, what does a theater show look like? What does it really mean? So I felt like it was dead. I was like, there's nothing. We're never going to perform stand up again. I'm never leaving my house again. My dreams have been shattered. The momentum is gone. Like all, you know, and then as the world opened up again, I started doing it. Handful of times at Union Hall, handful of times at Caveat, which is like another space that I think
that is a really nice space. I like that.
Beautiful, and like it feels like it kind of like splits the difference between like a bar show, a theater show, and like a UCB kind of space. Like it kind of has elements of each of those that make it a little different than like what else is out there.
It's something about
I wish the ceiling was lower. That's my only.
Yeah, I could see that. I never performed there, but I've been to an event there. I went to Drunk Black History there in 2020. But it's something about being in New York City, Lower East Side, Village area, East Village, going downstairs, doing a show, beer. You can smell the beer. You can, it's just
popcorn, but it's like there's books and shelves and plants and like a nice rug on the stage, but like, you know, it's still just kind of like a hang. I think it's a cool space.
Yeah,
it was really a cool space. It like attracts, and like I think that their like programming bend is like slightly educational. They always want things to have like, so like I think they're doing more just like, it's a straight stand-up show now, but like I think they like to have an audience that is like intellectually curious. So it was a great place to like workshop the show as I was developing it, because it was like a smart crowd that's not like, what about the baby killing? Like, or it's not that that's like, you know, any audience necessarily, but definitely like a super smart crowd that like understood what I was trying to do while it was still in progress and maybe not quite where it needed to be yet. And then, you know, I had been workshopping it around with like, and we had been in talks with my producers to like do it at Cherry Lane, but it's like all about like the scheduling, because like you do a 6-week run, so like. I think Edelman was in there. We were talking about like maybe like November of, you know, last year. And then like Alex's show started, and I'm so like grateful. I mean, he's having such a successful run of his that like it didn't.
What is his show?
It's about him and being a Jewish person that attends a white supremacist meetup to kind of like confront, not to confront anybody, but to kind of like see what they're saying and kind of understand a little bit of like the realities of that. But he was doing, it was like when that Omicron wave in December of 2020 into January, like,
Oh, 2021.
2021, I'm sorry. He had shows get canceled. Like, he had, like, the theaters kind of shut down again. And I'm, like, very happy that I didn't, like, then it just, like, pushed everything back and things kept getting pushed back. And then finally we had, like, all right, it's going to be end of April start. And I was like, God, like, when we were planning, I was like, that seems so far away. And I'm, like, so grateful that, like, I had the time to finish developing. It meant that, like, I got the director that, like, is a huge part of, like, why I think parts of the show came together.
Is it Lila Neugbauer?
Yes. And she, like, wasn't available at other times, so she wasn't even on our list. And then because we had, like, done it in April, that meant that, like, she happened to be available, so we met, and it was perfect.
Talk about that a little bit. Talk about that process, like, working with her, choosing her. I've seen some of her work. I've seen at least...
She's a genius.
Two or three of her projects in the theater world, and I've just been like, okay, you're just like, yeah, all right. And it's just, like, a name, and I was like, why is that name familiar? Yeah.
She's the real deal, and, like, we kind of, I had met with it. We originally were going for maybe, like, a big comedy name. You know, like, you think about, like, the women who are, like, directing things like films and were helming television shows. And it's like, oh, like, are these the right thing? Like, cause you're just had, like, you're like, how do you get butts in seats based on a poster? Like, big names. But then Lila, I was like, cause I met with some other theater directors and it just, like, wasn't quite the right fit vibe-wise. You know, I didn't want somebody to come in and try and change what the show is, but at the same time I did need help kind of zooming out, because, like, as a stand-up, like, it's so easy to be like, and this joke and this joke and this joke, and it's like all these jokes work, but it's like, what's the story here? Like, stepping back, and, like, I needed someone who really understood that. And we met, and it was just this instant, like, our first Zoom meeting together, she was like, we're the same age. Like, a lot of the show, as you've seen it, is actually not about abortion and is a little bit about what women have to face when they're thinking about motherhood and what it means to be a mother and what it means to opt out of motherhood. And, like, the fact that even it's considering opting out instead of opting in. Like, it's just, I think that, like, that's what I found the most interesting. And she's a woman of the same age, also doesn't have children. We have similar backgrounds, just, like, family-wise, you know, we're both Jewish. Like, there was just this alignment of, like, oh, you actually know what I'm trying to say already, and I don't have to, like, introduce the ideas to you. Because you're, she was like, I'm living what you're talking about. Like, I'm like, do I have kids? I mean, is the culture just telling me that I should have kids, or is it actually that I want kids? You know, so we had that talk, and I was like, you get it. You get what this is. And so we started working together, and it was, like, very, I've never worked with a director or, like, anything for stand-up. So it was this, like, very, you know, I think she was like, I don't think you even need my help. And I was like, I desperately do. She was like, I'm reading this and it feels like to me, this is a finished show. And I was like, it's not even close. And, like, we really, like, she gave me a really great joke at one point. She was like, I'm not telling you to include that. I was like, Lila, it's an amazing joke. I'm absolutely going to use that.
Can you say, well, I don't know if you should.
It was the one, it's the one where I, it's in it where I'm like, oh, everybody asks women if they want a baby. Like, I've been asked if I want a baby by, and then I list, like, my mother, my grandmother, my coworker, like, at Bloomingdale's. And then Lila's joke was like, the only people who ask men if they want a baby are women who have been dating them for 11 to 14 months.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. But that's relatively early, kind of early into the show, right?
It's in the middle first half.
Yeah.
But it's, like, such a funny joke.
Right.
And she's like, oh, I'm not a joke writer. And I'm like, you are. You just did.
You just wrote one.
But she was great. Like, we just, like, talked out ideas. And then, like, I would go and try and write that. And then we would look at it together and she'd be like, I think it's this. I think it's this, you know? And so, like, I had a good rough version of the show early April, and we opened April 25th, and I went to Moon Tower to Texas.
How was that?
It was fun. It's such a long festival that I was, like, bummed out that, like, I was in the early part and, like, a lot of my friends who were also doing the festival were in the second half. And I was, scheduling wise, that's how it worked. And I was like, but I was there just, like, to run the show.
Did Lila go down with you?
She did not. She had another project she was working on, so she couldn't, like, leave town because she was, like, color correcting something, I think.
Did she see this? So she would she give you notes? Would she see you run it? Like,
I would send her tapes when she couldn't, because, like, it was also like a lot of that was, like, I'm sure that you have experienced this where it's like you're not necessarily, and not that it's wrong to be like freaking out about COVID exposure, but when like your job gets jeopardized by if you test positive, which she was on a job.
Yeah.
And she was working, I believe she's working with someone who had some health issues that like enhanced their caution.
And down in Texas, like she couldn't, you couldn't really.
Yeah. Like I think that she was like, it's obviously like valuable, but it's like not necessarily worth the risk. And I'm like, no, especially when we can just videotape it and send it to you. Like it's
sure.
Not, you know, it's important to see it in the room, but it's also just important that you see like how this all sounds together.
Mm-hmm.
So she would look at it and then like the real, she helped me with a lot of writing or like in March, April. And then like the week before the show, like just being in rehearsal was when we really were like, oh, now we're like working capital W. We just rented a space, like a performance rehearsal space. And it was just like me and her and then eventually my stage manager. And Alana came one day too with notes and was great. But just like printed out scripts, pen, like both like fixing the language and like making it sound right, but also me memorizing it. And it was just running like we broke it up into five chunks. There were like, or there's, is it six? No, there's five. It's five acts that we kind of found the separations for it. And I would just, like, run the first one until I knew it by heart. And then we would run the second one until I knew it by heart. And then I would do one and two until I knew it by heart. And then three, 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 you know, it was just like such, it was the hardest I've ever worked in my life.
It shows. I mean, it shows, the work shows. I mean, I think to me, that's the fun part. Like, yeah, the performing is the icing on the cake, but the fun part is just,
prize.
Yeah, it's like working on it, failing.
Yeah.
Figuring out, oh, that didn't work. What about this? I don't like this. What about, you know, what can I do? And all, that's great.
Yeah. So it was like really fun to just like, it was like on the fly making changes and like these small changes and like just being like, oh, this line actually makes sense at the beginning of this paragraph, not at the end. Like this is the setup, not the punch. And it's just like, oh, of course, something that you wouldn't really know until you were just saying it a million times. And also like up until, even all through the three nights in Texas, I was using the entire script printed out on stage with me. Like I wasn't reading from it, but I like had it there. And like, there were parts where I was just reading and there were parts where I was like, hold on. And I would have to like, look. So it wasn't like I ever really was like saying things as naturally as I needed. So then like, once we were like, I was trying to memorize it and she was like, you clearly want to say this sentence. So just say this sentence, let's change it in the script. Like she was really good at like understanding.
So when you were, when you got on that. Sure. So when you got off book, I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah.
What was the, were there ever times during that run? So you did, the first run was like April to what?
April 25th to June 4th, seven shows a week for 6 weeks.
Fuck.
It was a lot. So like the first 4 days we had somebody on book that I could call to for line in the front row. And I'd never had that. Like, that's not a stand-up thing. Like, stand-up, you would have just, like, your notes on the side of the stage.
Yeah.
Look at them or something. But they were like, try it like this. If you don't like it, like, you're welcome to have notes. You're welcome. And I was like, no, I don't want to have notes on stage. And calling for line was so much easier to, like, stay in the rhythm of the show.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, what's the next line? And, like, as soon as I heard the first, like, four words, I knew exactly what
you
the
knew
next,
it.
Like,
section
was. But it's just, like, that, like, memory jog. And then you're not like looking and like thinking and then like, oh, what happened? Like it really was in my brain. And after like 3 or 4 nights of that, we didn't even have somebody up there anymore. Cause I was like, I don't think I need them.
Were there times like during the initial run, like the first week or so, were you finding new things that you did that you made tweaks to? Were you like, oh, this thing happened in this moment, or I got a laugh here that I wasn't expecting, or this type of reaction? What were some of those moments like?
There were definitely like here and there, like once any changes that really happened in the first like 2 weeks were really just like little edits. Cause I wasn't comfortable like riffing yet.
Sure.
But then like after that first like week or two, then like, because I just knew it actually, it wasn't as much like plow through the words that you know as quickly as possible. just like get to the next section where you know it more. So there were, but then like as things would start to happen in the room and everything was a little looser, then like some some riffing or some like reacting to an audience reaction suddenly could like kind of always work in the show. And then there was one joke that like I tried, and there were definitely like jokes, and like in between the first and second run, like I went and rewrote like a couple of sections, just like changed them a bit. But there was like one, I struggled for so long to like find this one joke from the beginning. I always knew I wanted to address like, it's very strange to be a woman who needs an abortion or to terminate a pregnancy in some way, which is abortion. And like that I can't just go to my gynecologist. Like you actually, often you have to go to a different place. Like I had to go to Planned Parenthood. My gynecologist doesn't, at the time, their practice did not perform abortions. Mm-hmm. That's very strange. Like that's, it's funny, but it's also like worth like pointing out to the audience, like I had the easiest version of this that anybody could ever have. And I still couldn't even go to my doctor. Like that's kind of wild and like very descriptive of what it's like to be a woman, especially moving through the healthcare system. And I tried so many different versions of bits to try and explain that. And they never really worked. It was always off. It was like, it's like being a European car. It's like being a seafood restaurant that doesn't serve shrimp. Like, what is this analogy? Because I love an analogy joke.
Sure.
Who doesn't? They're the easiest to write.
Yeah.
But then, like, I was doing an interview after the Roe v. Wade leak happened, and everybody suddenly wanted to talk to me about my show. And it's like, well, where were you guys at the beginning of this run when we were, like, dying for press? But I was doing an interview, and I said, like, we were talking about that exact idea, like, not based on the show, but just, like, as a woman, like, that's what's so crazy, and that's what the show is trying to show. And I was like, yeah, I mean, like, it's crazy that I can't get an abortion at my gynecologist, but, like, my dentist does Botox. And I was just like, oh, it's that. That's the joke. Like, my dentist does Botox. And it's such a big, huge laugh in the show. And that wasn't until the end of May that I, like, figured that out. I had been doing the show for, like, almost a full month, like, 30 shows in that I'm finally like, it's this. And, like, that's a huge laugh at a point that was kind of a weak joke before. So like there was still room for like changes and kind of the show to evolve once it was up.
Did you like that experience, like your whole experience of running it and still finding new things like that, being in residency?
Yeah, I found like it's great at the it's stressful at the beginning because you're like doing something hard. And but like you can see yourself learn it so much over those first couple nights. Like you're like, oh, by just doing this on a stage in front of an audience a bunch of nights in a row, like suddenly like you know it, you can really make it better. And then you're like, oh, I'm having fun because I'm good at this. But then it starts to get a little boring. Like as a stand, like I've never done theater. I've never done it. I've never done this kind of performing. So like for me, I was like, oh, I kind of want to talk about other stuff now. Like starting to get just like, I want to like work on a new, like I wanted a new bit to be excited about, you know, I wanted to like make it feel a little different for me. And I found like, I was like, oh, there's ways to kind of like be writing the new bits, but like without wanting to change the show too much. Cause I'm like, I started to like look at stuff where I'm like, this works. Why am I trying to change a thing that like works? It's just because I'm bored. So, but what then
you,
like,
go ahead. I was, you're going to say,
but then it kind of, then I learned kind of like how to be incorporating new stuff, but still like preserving what the show is and not changing it too much and keeping it interesting for me, but still like giving the audience that came on June 30th, the same show basically that people got on April 25th. In terms of like, this is what it was. It's like, I'm not going to change like the ending or like the point or like anything, but I'll update some jokes.
Yeah, that's a different kind of monster when you're doing something like doing something that long and make it. Did you do anything else to keep yourself interested and locked in?
No, I mean, I kind of did like most of my day, except for the August run, I've been working during the day, but that August run was like a little lower. We were only doing 5 shows a week, not 7. And it just kind of was a little easier, kind of like swan song.
Yeah.
For the show at the theater. I didn't really do much during the days and didn't really do much. Like it was really exhausting to get on that stage every night and to like, not just be standing and talking for 75 minutes, which is like, kind of tiring.
People don't understand. I don't think people understand that how it takes it takes a lot out of you. Even if you're just talking up there, you're not singing and dancing, you're talking. There is an exposure of yourself that you're doing every night. You're reliving that every night. And that becomes that's the thing that you have to do.
Yeah. And like, you're not just doing stand up. You're like actually like taking people on more of an emotional journey where there's like these like very fun, like highs of like big bits and like silly laugh lines. But then you're also going to say some serious stuff and you can't like phone that. That has to be as present as the jokes are. Anyway, so like women can't be mothers and not mothers. You have to choose one. Like you can't be like flip about the stuff that's serious. And the parts of my show that are very intense are around an intense topic that people feel a lot of things about. And not that I think anybody was coming to the show like conflicted about how they feel about abortion, but people were coming in with their own baggage and trauma that like, even though I'm not like individually speaking to every person and like ask like in that room, I'm like holding space for that emotionally on stage. And like, you don't really realize it until you're in it, like how mentally draining that is to like be that kind of repository for people's feelings on such a radioactive issue.
Mm-hmm. I remember I auditioned for a thing that was around that they compared. They paired, I think it was some article paired your show with this reading of this play.
Yes.
And I auditioned for it, but I got a call and I got a call back and I missed the call back because I had the wrong date or something. It wasn't that great, whatever the thing was, but it was, I had missed it because of family stuff. And it was just like, it was just reading the testimony, like the cold.
Yeah. From like a really horrific.
Yeah, in Philly trial. Or something.
Yeah, it's a trial about like a man who was practicing abortions and doing lots of terrible things in that practice. And it's
right.
It's that case is what like anti-abortion people love to point to of like this is, and it's like that is like one psychopath.
It's
not representative at all. But like I remember like I didn't ever read it or hear about it. I just read a little bit about it and like some people were like dropped out of it after the fact because they were like, this is too graphic. Like the testimony is like a legal medical testimony of things that happened. And it's like pretty gruesome.
It is. And
that was like a reason that first theater dropped him. I think they were like, we're not putting this up. Like we can't have people say this and hear this, like all those things.
Yeah. Cause I was like, oh yeah, that's that. I was like, oh, I think I read for that. I was like, I'm just trying to see. It was like a reading and they, whatever. But that was
stuff comes across and you're like, oh, all right, sure.
You just like, we'll see I can't talk about what came across my desk last weekend, but it's one of those things where, like you said, like I always say on the show, like you have to fulfill the demands of your script every night. And you have to be ready to do that. And I remember doing a play one time where I loved the work. I loved doing the show, but you did have to be ready for that shit. You had to be ready to go. And it was like a 3 hour play. And it was just like, you had to be ready for that shit.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting and fascinating thing that we do, especially that you did, where you have to look at that stuff every night and then try to make it palatable for a general audience.
Yeah. And you never know who's in that room. And like, I had a friend of mine who was like, I really want to see your show. I really want to support you. I'm sure it's genius, but like, I have a lot of emotional trauma around my own experience. And I just don't think I can. And I think that there are people who like know that about themselves and choose not to come. I think there are people who like, don't know how much they're carrying around about an experience until they're listening to somebody else say it. And like, there are definitely, like, I heard a lot of tears when I would like do certain parts of the show. Mm. And it's like, that's not, I mean, that's, it's what you want. It's also not what you want. Like, it's like, I want the show to feel light and like the antidote to like what most abortion content is, which is like trauma Olympics, like the darkest things you can imagine to like
make
a case of its value. But then you're also like, wow, like people are like sitting and listening to this and like, that's how much it's affecting them that they're like moved to cry. But you just don't know. I've had audiences that seemingly have like no emotional reaction. Like you just never know who's going to be sitting in the room.
It's a different
like permeate the rest of the you know, members of the audience.
How has this experience helped your stand up? Like, how has that helped you?
We'll see. I don't know. I haven't really. No. I took last week off of like any idea of comedy. I was like, no stand up, no spots, nothing. And like this week, I'm getting back in, and I'm kind of going to start from zero on. Like, I have old bits that like aren't in the show that like I'll continue to like, you know, lean on as I try and write new material.
Yeah.
But like, it did help me. Like, I think like to think about things because like, it's 75 minutes of my own material and experience. I'm like, I'll lean into an analogy joke again and again and again and again. And like, I saw on the show how that can feel really repetitive at times when I was writing it. I'm like, God, every joke in this section is just, that's like this. And I was like, okay, well, I can't like move some of this to later. This all has to happen in this part of the show. So now I actually have to think of a different way to write some jokes about this idea.
Right.
I don't want it to feel like I'm laundry listing analogies for people of different things that I saw in a room. Mm-hmm. So like it did force me to like think a little outside what like my first instinct is for a joke sometimes.
Sure.
Which like I haven't seen how that necessarily will affect joke writing moving forward. I haven't like sat down and written very much, but I have like started to, and I'm like, oh, this did like, I do like just kind of approach the writing experience a little bit differently now.
Are you gonna, I know we talked a little bit about it last month after I saw your show, what are you gonna try to do anything else with it, like record it or
I was kind of waiting to see like what was happening with my work life about, cause like touring is something that has to kind of, it has to be like managed a little bit in terms of like how the logistics will work. So like now that I know kind of what my world is for the next few months, we're looking at like trying to tour it in certain ways. I have like a couple of one-offs that I'm going to do, just like one-nighters out of town, but then also hopefully like a little bit more, you know, building that out more. And then like hopefully record, like I think it'll exist on tape for people to see in some way at some point. I don't know what that's going to look like yet. Like it's like, yeah, your fingers are crossed for like a giant payout from Netflix, but maybe it's on YouTube and that's, and people get to see it. And like, that's kind
of all. I think it deserves money and something.
I want people to see it.
Sure. Sure. No, I, cause like I told you, and I'm not blowing smoke, that's something to me. It works as a stand-up special. It worked because it has an arc to it. It's just maybe you could say it's, for lack of a better term, it's not trying to down anything anybody else, but it's just a little more elevated.
Yeah.
And because it has that theme to it.
Yeah. Because it's one story as opposed to like a bunch of different bits on a bunch of different things, which is also a really enjoyable way to consume stand-up. But like it's just a different, you know, and I think it's like that, that's how the UK model for comedy is kind of very focused on these like 1 hour shows that maybe have like a bit more of a through line than like a standard American comedy special might. And I think that like, that's kind of trickling over more. I feel like more and more, you know, Jacqueline Novak and Alex and the way Biglia does stuff and like what Mulaney's working on. And I know that there's like a bunch of other comics, like both that are like peers of ours and also are, you know, more successful and well-known, like are just kind of starting to do, like, it is just like an interesting, fun challenge to be like, can I make an hour about this one thing, whatever that thing is.
And
it was really fun to do that. And like, I don't know if I'm going to turn around and do another one anytime soon, but like down the road, I would like to tackle something else and try and make a show out of it. Cause it really was fun to like figure it all out.
Yeah. And I just say that because I mean, you know, sometimes people say, I got 45 minutes and it's a special, but this one, you know, it is, now that you mention it, it does have that UK model, but it's funny.
Yeah.
Not all that stuff, just because their accents are different, doesn't make it great.
No,
agreed. And does not make it funny. It's just like we were talking about, like Rathaniel, the Carmichael special, where he talked about he came out and everything, but he had some good jokes. He started off at the top, I thought, with some with some funny stuff. I got to watch it again, but mm-hmm. it took it to something where, oh, this is special.
Yeah.
Not just because of the gay stuff, but it's just because like it had a through line. And I think that's just kind of missing with a lot of stuff that's coming out now in our with our peers and people who are beyond us in their career, you know.
And it also like makes it like it's harder, but it's also like easier to get some of these huge like the callbacks that you can write when you're writing one story.
Right.
If you're going off into tangents, like I have a callback where I reference The Sopranos like late in the show after mentioning them quite early. And mm-hmm. it's like such a moment for people, even though it's not like the funniest joke in the show by any means, but it is such a like, oh my God, you connected this to that. And like you, I'm not saying you can't do that in a regular stand-up set where it's just different
things,
but like it's harder.
Yeah. It's just that there's in it there. It speaks to an investment that the audience has with you while they're taking this ride with you. And then you bring this thing up. It's not even a sleight of hand. It's just a thing where it's a tool. It's a device. Yeah. And it's like, oh, and there's a payoff for that.
Yeah.
You know, that's all. Like, I just think, you know, like when I think of like some of my favorite specials in the modern era, I mean, like Bring the Pain, like mm-hmm. Chris Rock's there telling jokes, but it's like that breakdown of like observational current events, mm-hmm. personal stuff, relationships. Mm-hmm. When you do that well, then it's special. But when it's just like, I've got time and I am doing it and I am, and give me money, Netflix, you know, it's a little different, you know? So that I applaud you for this. I think it's a terrific piece. And I think I'd love to see that you're making some money off of it being recorded, you know?
Yeah, I hope so too. And I hope also just like I get so many messages from people that are like, bring this to Des Moines. Like, we need this in Alabama. And it's there are places I absolutely will go and do the show. And there are places I absolutely will not go and do the show live. And I want people to have access to the show if it's something that they want to see. I'm not trying to change anybody's mind. The show is clearly not going to like move the needle on politics for somebody who disagrees with what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're somebody who's like aching for that show and you live somewhere that I wouldn't come, like I would want them to have access to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's great. Cause you're seeing a lot of it now. I think, I don't know her personally, Alyssa Lynn Paris. Has one that just came out and on Peacock. Mm-hmm. I got to get Peacock.
I got to say, it's like, because I'm somebody who watches a lot of Bravo, and Bravo is part of the NBC Universal family. Like, I love Peacock, but there's like Girls 5 Eva is really funny. And the second season especially. And like, they've done, like Joelle Johnson's special is on Peacock. Joe Firestone's special that she did teaching the senior citizens. Like, I gotta say, like, Peacock is like a sleeper good streamer.
All right. I mean, I got to get it. I just don't want, it's just so many. There's so many.
There's so many. I know. It's like, I still need to get Paramount Plus, and it's like, how?
I did it for a week so I could watch that movie, Honor Society.
Mm. I want to see the Reno 911 movie, and that's where that is too.
Yeah. It's always, it's always they
one thing
that they've got that you want to see. I want to close it with, you just talking about, I think a couple of days ago you had posted about on your podcast, Ruined is your podcast, right?
Yes.
What is that show about? I saw that you posted about one of my favorite movies of this year, Resurrection.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, that's in our Patreon. So
okay,
apologies. My friend Hallie Kiefer, who's like a super funny, she did stand up a little bit, but she's like a comedy writer. Brilliant. She's a good friend of mine, but she's obsessed with horror movies and mm-hmm. always has been. And I'm very not interested in horror. I don't like that genre. I've seen like 5 horror movies in my life and they all scarred me deeply. Like I have nightmares. I'm not a fan. So when Hallie would see new movies, she'd be like, I just have to tell somebody this like insane twist in this movie. And I'm like, I'm never going to see it. Tell it to me. I want to know what happened. Like I'm the Wikipedia horror movie person. Like, I'm like, well, what's the end? And so that's pretty much the premise. It's like every episode is a different movie, and Hallie tells me, walks me through the plot, and we play some games based, like, what would you do in this scenario?
Okay.
Of different horror movies, like across all the subgenres, we do everything. But Resurrection sounded so weird, but also scary, and also just like troubling, but strange. I mean, what a movie.
It is weird. And the ending was very weird, but it was done so well. I mean, yeah.
Rebecca Hall is such a perfect horror actress.
I mean, I think she is just, she's fantastic. I mean, she's just, she's really good. I really like her. I like her a lot. She's just had a run of recent films that have been just like,
yeah.
Pitch
I think
perfect.
She does a lot of, like, she did The Night House.
The Night House, they didn't stick the landing, but she was great.
She's great in it.
So you did watch that one. That's more of a thriller.
I don't watch any of these.
Okay,
I watch all of the trailers, and then
okay.
Hallie tells me the plot.
Okay.
So I've seen, like, I get the vibe, and mm-hmm. then, like, I learn what happened from Hallie. But just that scene where you see, like, the same house number reversed, I was like, this is terrifying.
Yeah,
so
she's
scary.
She's weird. And what I do with a lot of guests, I always like to ask, what else have you, what you, so you're not watching that, what are you watching? You're watching Girls 5 Eva, you're watching.
I watched Girls 5 Eva and I loved it. I'm watching, Josh Gondelman and I regularly talk to each other about how we think the best show on TV is What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay. I've heard good things about that.
It really, it like, I just find, and I've written on many of the shows I'm describing where it's like, it's a comedy, but it's also a little realistic and a little like there's mm-hmm. so many like dramedies and kind of these like sad comedies out there. And yeah. What We Do in the Shadows is just a pure comedy. It is just like the jokes, the performances, like it's like super talented comedic actors being, it's about vampires that live in Staten Island. So it's
what?
Just like, yeah, it's they're vampires that live in Staten Island. And it's just okay. kind of like, it's like half like, weird vampire stuff going on and then half like the annoyances of what it's like to live in a city
okay.
and just, like, go through every day. Like there's like, it's very, it's, and it's shot mockumentary style. So there's just, which I obviously got overdone in the early 2000s, like
yeah,
The Office, but like more laughs per minute than any other genre of comedy
okay.
because like you really do, like, it's like, you get a funny line and then you get somebody kind of like looking to camera, like, I don't know. Like, and it's like fun. And like, they're all so talented. It's just like, it's just fun and it's silly. And this season has been like the best season of a comedy I've seen in a long time.
Okay. Well, anything else? Like any movies that, do you go to the movies at all?
I'm bad at movies. I'm good at TV. Like I'll watch okay. most TV stuff that comes out and catch like at least an episode or two of everything and that, but movies on, I just watched Elvis cause I was just very curious.
Okay.
And like,
how was it?
I
haven't
it?
Seen, no, I haven't seen
I'm
it.
Not a Baz Luhrmann fan. I like mm-hmm. that super stylistic directing isn't my style. So like, I would have loved to have seen that movie with that cast in the hands of a different director.
Mm.
Cause I think like the Elvis story, like I knew a little bit about it, but like to really learn like the financial abuse that he suffered at the hands of his manager. And
yeah,
you know, he's such a pop culture icon that like, I don't, there's so many stories like that where I'm like, oh, I know there's stuff here, but I don't know like what the real story is.
Gotcha.
And I thought that Austin Butler did a really lovely job.
Cool.
The music was great.
Yeah. I don't know if that's my thing, but I yeah. may see it eventually, but I'm just kind of like,
Yeah, I was just like bored and I was like, I've been watching TV for like two straight days and I was like, I need something that's not like episodic right now.
I feel you. No, I'm right there with you. God, what was the last movie I saw was Funny Pages. It's an A24 movie about this kid that wants to be a comic strip writer, comic book writer. Mm. And he lives in New Jersey and he's just this weird, almost like, is it Harvey Crumb? Who did those? Anyway, it was weird. It was kind of weird, and yeah. it was just like it was all right. It's yeah. weird.
I'm a big rewatcher. I rewatch stuff I've already seen.
Oh God, I love that. I mean, I got tons of DVDs. I just bought the To-Do List with Aubrey Plaza on digital, because I think like Rebecca Hall, Aubrey Plaza, you know, for a while, people were thinking, oh, she's just going to kind of play herself a little bit in these like Parks and Recs kind of a, and then some of the other things like variation on a theme. But she's really, like, to me, evolved into just a remarkable actor who, when she's not in on it, when she, there's this movie I just saw called Spin Me Round. Alison Brie is the lead and she plays this. Have you heard of this one?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it. Or it's, I saw like press for it.
It's it gets weird towards the end, but there's a tell towards the beginning of the film where it's like, oh yeah, they did say this was going to get weird. But she, Alison Brie, plays this woman who works at an Olive Garden style restaurant. And then we'll wrap it up.
I just like leaned on my hand.
And then she, no, I know. But and then she gets selected to go on this trip to Italy to the headquarters to meet the guy who, the owner of the restaurants, and the weird stuff happens. And Aubrey Plaza plays the assistant, the rich guy's owner's assistant, and she's in this movie for maybe 15 or 20 minutes, and it's just like when she's gone, you really feel it. Like, oh where is she? Yeah. And she's got this movie, and Emily the Criminal, that came out in Sundance, and now it's out in the theaters. It's like she elevates the script and makes things better. I really like her a lot.
I like her. Yeah. She's great.
Yeah. So she's somebody that it's like anything she's in, I'll see it. So I just bought the to-do list. I'll probably rewatch that at some point. Well, Allison, this has been amazing. I was so happy that you agreed to do this. I told you when I texted you, I was like, I try not to gush, because shout out to Martin Urbano, who was there, also there.
Love Martin.
And I didn't want to be like Martin to look at me like, Chris, okay, weirdo. But yeah, it was really great. It was inspiring, actually. I think I talked about that on one of the last episodes I recorded, where it's just good to see your peers do something great and be good at something.
Yeah, and nothing inspires me to do stand up more than, or like write more than, seeing somebody that I know getting on stage and doing something that's cool. Like, I just last night, Lisa Traeger is a good friend of mine, and she was here, and then we walked over to Littlefield because she had a spot on Butterboy, and like just watching her from the back of the room, I was like, damn, I gotta write more. Like, she's so good. Yeah. Like, it's just like that's like, you know, watching John Mulaney get on stage and do a special, I'm like, yes, that's inspiring in the sense of like, that's a good version of what comedy is. But, but like, in terms of like me being like, damn, I got to sit down and fucking work because I want to, and that looks fun, is like watching friends.
The friend that you know actually do something and do it well. Yeah. I saw him tape New in Town. Yeah. He's a bad motherfucker, man. Be interesting to see what happens now with, I don't know. I haven't gone to his shows that he's done at the,
I saw one of those first ones at City Winery, like way, like over a year ago before touring. And it's, I mean, there was some really funny stuff that I'm sure did not last, 'cause like so much of it was like kind of his first pass, and like a lot of, you know, when you're workshopping something. And
sure.
I'm like, damn, like there were so many just like little dumb jokes that I'm like, oh, that's never going to like end up in the final cut.
Is he still wearing a suit?
He was wearing sweatshirt and jeans, but it wasn't like a high stakes, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was at a theater. It was just like City Winery isn't really.
I did a weekend. I just asked because I did a weekend in Saratoga Springs in June. Right before Father's Day weekend. And there was a father and daughter that said, oh, yeah, we saw John Mulaney. He was good. I forgot to ask if he was wearing a suit now, because I just want to see if he's doing like, I'm going to be gritty now.
Yeah, I don't know. He was when he was working it out, but he never used to wear a suit when he was like working stuff out.
Yeah, yeah.
When he's at the cellar or whatever, I think he's just in regular clothes.
Got it. What was he wearing, Allison?
I don't know.
Yeah, so this has been awesome. What, plug your stuff, plug the podcast, plug anything you got coming up.
Ruined is the podcast. We're on at Ruined Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, and I believe TikTok. That's our producer's world, not ours. I don't understand TikTok and I don't want to. But she's running that for us. And we have a Patreon for that too, and those details are all like on those pages. And then I'm just getting back out and doing stand up in New York again. So just you can follow me at Allison Leiby on Twitter and Instagram for show updates. And Oh God, a show about abortion will tour, so keep an eye out for that.
That's great. And everybody who listens, make sure you check her out when she's in your town. Allison Leiby, what a delight. What a privilege. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. And I will talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.